When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Testaverde will take the snap, go to one knee. This game is over. The Jets lock up their first playoff appearance since 1991 on a 21-16 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Good morning!
To save his life,
call his wife, and hey, how we doing? 406, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I got you for one more hour till the warm-up show. 888-808-1019, that's the number to call. And me and Fleek's got you for one more hour, like I said, on this Tuesday morning. We didn't have to watch the Yankees play baseball last night, and most people are pleased with that. I'm not. I need them back out there changing this season around. Because, as we said and we opened the show with, both teams get ready for the stretch run here, which is for the Mets, it's the whole season and whether or not they're going to compete and whether or not this front office is going to give them what they need come the trade deadline right now. As you watched last night, or excuse me, yesterday, afternoon start, exactly what they need, some arms in that bullpen. And the only question is, is it so bad that it will cost you a chance to get it? Because you know Stearns needs that extra love and attention. You know he's going to need that little shove. That's why Brandon Nimmo's talking about in the postgame, because he's trying to give it to him. He's trying to give him that little nudge, like, help us, from a group that's been saying it all year, from a group that tried to tell us in spring training they're better than people are giving them credit for. And they have the meeting and they believe in themselves. And since then, they've shown the rest of us. And despite being incredible for the last month, all they've really done is battle back to just be 500. And now they are a game under 500. They're a couple games back of the wild card position. They've now, at least with the split against Pittsburgh, have now secured the tiebreaker over Pittsburgh. So you can consider them one game better than Pittsburgh than they even are. And they're going to take on Washington and Colorado for these two series leading into the All-Star break. And they're extremely important to send a message to this ownership group and to David Stearns in particular that they are worth, maybe sidestepping the overall plan of acquiring assets and building a stable organization and, focusing strictly on the future. And it's time to maybe invest a little bit more than you thought you might have to in this team because they're showing you enough. But the bullpen's in disarray. You saw it yesterday in the game where, Christian Scott's cruising along, gave up one hit, a two-run home run, but the game is tied at two after another clutch home run from Nimmo, who's just been, he's been unbelievable. Lindor clearly are the two worthy players of being an All-Star and not Pete Alonso. I don't think it's that big a deal. There's a chance that both of them might end up being on the team anyway. You never know who backs out, who gets hurt, who doesn't decide to want to, take more time away from their families. You hear it all the time. So there's a chance both of those guys or one of those guys could be All-Stars, but they are clearly more warranted of being a National League All-Star than Pete Alonso is, but he's got to be in that home run derby. You know Pete. He ain't missing it for the world. But Nimmo with another big home run, and this bullpen, obviously, with Christian Scott cruising and, on regular rest for the first time. I know that makes people it's obnoxious to people, but being on his first time on regular rest this year, they felt they wanted to limit him to about 75 pitches. And in the mind of the manager, he had no other choice but to go to a young pitcher who was making his major league debut with two outs in the sixth, and it absolutely fell apart on the Mets. And that's what's happened, more often than not with this bullpen. Even on the wins, it's been shaky. And they desperately need some help. And they better make sure that this bullpen doesn't cost them the opportunity to get some if they play their way out of it and this general manager doesn't feel like he wants to bolster a team 4, 5, 6 games out of a wild card spot. So these are games they have to win at home against Washington, a beatable team, a team they just took, they just split a 4-game series with on the road. Got to come back, take 2 out of 3 minimum, and then one of the worst teams in baseball in Colorado. Build up some momentum, stack up some dubs heading into the All-Star game. That's on the docket for the Mets. The Yankees, and their disastrous play is now off for a six-game road trip against two of their biggest rivals, including obviously their biggest rival this year, a team they're trailing by three in the American League East standings, the Baltimore Orioles. But first up, a three-game set against the always tough, always pesky Tampa Bay Rays, who are having a down year but playing a little bit better as of late. And you know they will always play the Yankees tough, and right now it doesn't matter who the Yankees play. And this is what I've been saying forever. It's not necessarily, oh, they can't beat the Dodgers. Oh, they can't beat the Red Sox. Oh, they can't beat the Orioles. They can't beat the Cincinnati Reds when they're going like this. And obviously the manager's been a major discussion over the last few days, and rightfully so. I have been in Boone's corner. I have defended Boone constantly. I put countlessly and constantly. I don't know why I put countless. I've defended him all the time. Okay? That good enough for you? Constantly. Against all comers. Because I don't blame Aaron Boone. This roster is not his fault. And ultimately, I believe he's a good manager. But I cannot pretend like I'm not seeing what I'm seeing. And what we're seeing is lackluster baseball on top of the losing. We're seeing body language that suggests guys who are moping and guys who are sulking and guys who are lazy and not having their head in the game and making easy mistakes. Young kids like Volpe who hustle everywhere, suddenly not running through home plate to score a run on an obvious double play. Or DJ LeMahieu not just stopping and running right into a tag. A veteran who's won batting championships on both sides of the aisle. I mean, this guy has been a cagey veteran his entire career. He doesn't know not to run into a tag. Grisham, one of the best defensive center fielders in the league. Gold Glove winner. Casually going after base hits up the middle and turning singles into doubles. I mean, we are seeing the type of baseball that does get managers fired. Now, I don't expect that. But I can't bury my head in the sand and say that on some level, Boone has to fix it. Now, I don't know if what everybody's clamoring for will fix it. I don't think calling players out publicly suddenly changes everything. You think DJ LeMahieu is fine with what he did, and until consequences are there, then he'll realize it? You think DJ LeMahieu went back to the bench that day or back to his hotel that night and wasn't sick to his stomach about the mistakes he's made or the laziness he's shown? You think Volpe needs to the threaten of the wooden spoon in order to come through, in order to hustle? I don't know if airing out grievances publicly or what needs to change. All I know is whatever Boone is trying, whatever's going on behind the scenes is not helping. And this team is not only playing bad baseball, it's playing ugly baseball, it's playing poorly fundamental baseball, it's playing poorly coached baseball. That's just a fact. And they've got six games against their rivals heading into the All-Star break. And if they could find a way to win both these series, it would go a long way into taking a deep breath, calming these guys down, getting everything back on track, and feeling like, okay, we'll come out of the All-Star break and restart this damn thing, as opposed to losing these two series and waiting for the continuation to start again on Friday. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the phone calls. Richard in Brooklyn. What's up, Rich?
Hi. I think there are two things that are most important about having a good manager.
Okay.
One, getting the most out of the talent that you have.
Yep.
And two, working the pitching staff, particularly the bullpen. And on both those counts, I don't think Boone is up to it. And I'm not just talking about this season, but seasons in the past.
Well,
he works the pitching.
Yeah, I disagree with the pitching staff. I disagree with your bullpen.
I think so. He works the bullpen every year too much, and then by the end of the year, they're so tired they're not up to doing it.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. I understand. In today's baseball, guys just, you know, pitchers don't go deep into the game. Every year they've had a top five bullpen and ERA and every other statistic you want to look at. Somehow he's gotten them to be this successful over the course of the season. I mean, that's just a fact. You can look back at the numbers. The Yankees bullpen has always had good numbers. That's just a fact. So somehow along the way he's gotten them to be successful over the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, you want to talk about running guys into the ground. I mean, that's notorious what Joe Torre did. Nobody seems to have a problem with Joe Torre's bullpen management. The Yankees have him won, plain and simple.
Joe Torre had winning teams, so people didn't, you know, didn't mess with him.
Well, that's my point exactly. Joe Torre ran countless relievers into the ground. What you just said, by the end of the season, I don't think guys like Tanyan Sturts or Paul Quantrill or Scott Proctor, there's a number of guys whose careers were ruined by Joe Torre, but no one cares because they won because they had a talented team that won a bunch of championships. I think that his management of the bullpen is absolutely fine. I have no problems. I mean, does he make mistakes? Does he do things I don't like? We've just been killing Mendoza. Everybody's raving about what a great job Mendoza's doing. And look at how, oh, man, he's turned this team around. They were floundering. Now they're back in the mix. He just went to a major league debut in the sixth inning and blew the game. Look back at last year. Look at the bullpen and Bruce Bochy last year for Texas. That bullpen was so terrible last year, they blew the division after leading it all year. And then they got hot in the postseason. Every manager, no one's perfect in the bullpen. They know things we don't know. We sit in our chair, watch the game, and go, how could you do that? How could you do that? Not knowing that this guy's arm's a little sore. He's not going to tell you these things. But ultimately, this year, the talent hasn't been there. That's just that. I mean, Ferguson stinks. A lot of the guys just in the bullpen aren't very good, and it's been a cavalcade of injuries and all other kind of stuff. I don't think Aaron Boone's management of the bullpen is a major problem. I don't think Aaron Boone's in-game decisions are a major problem. I don't. Never have. And getting the most out of his talent, this roster sucks, does it not? Everyone says it. Roster's terrible. Brian Cashman put together a miserable team. How did he manage them to the best record in Major League Baseball for the first 2.5 months? Just pure luck? You can't have it both ways. If the roster's terrible, then Boone's doing something fairly well. Or if Boone's a moron, then the roster's better than you give it credit for. It's got to be one or the other. Because they've won a lot of games. Even now, when everyone harkens back, oh, it's just like 2022. It's going to be just like it's just like 2 years ago in 2022. It's making me sick. They won 99 games and won the division in 2022. And then won a playoff series and played in the ALCS. Yes, they got swept in the ALCS to the Astros, who went on to win the World Series. It was embarrassing. It was an ugly series, no doubt. Would you not sign for 99 wins in a division title right now? I would. Sign me up. I'm in. The problem with Aaron Boone is specific to the issue of consistent laziness and consistent mind-numbing mistakes, mental errors, and the inability to hustle. It's happened multiple times, specifically after the last 2 weeks. And what bothers me the most is it felt like it was never better at the start of this year. The urgency, the Juan Soto effect. We talked about it for weeks. The urgency of the team and the hustle of the team and the never say die and not giving guys days off. They're playing every day. I remember specifically going, really being ecstatic about the San Francisco series at the end of a long West Coast trip, that they had already won the West Coast trip, already were going to have a winning West Coast trip, had already won the first 2 games of the San Francisco series, and they were flying back home with a day off on Monday. That has always been a guaranteed lock it up. Judge gets the Sunday off, double off days, we'll see you on Tuesday. That's been a guarantee. And yet Judge played in that game. They came back in the ninth, ninth inning home run from Soto to win the game. They were playing with a sense of urgency and purpose like we hadn't seen in years. Judge talked about changing that early on in the year. The Yankees had treated April and May pretty much like extended spring trainings where guys were not going deep into games, and Judge was getting a lot of days off, and this one was getting a lot of days off. They eased their way into the season. This year was completely different when it came to that aspect. Everything about the urgency and the effort were better than ever. And yet, once they start losing, once the ball starts to get rolling in the wrong direction, out come the starting pitchers complaining, out come, yelling at their infielders, moping, crying in the dugout, bad body language, not running out ground balls. He has not been able, whatever the case may be, he has not been able to get them in the right state of mind once the losing streak that inevitably comes. Right? You know they're going to lose 5 of 6. You know they're going to lose 7 of 10. That's going to happen over the course of the year. To almost every team in baseball, it's going to happen. But for whatever reason, when that 7 of 10 comes, when that 8 of 12 comes, they always turn it into freaking 16 of 22. It never just stops at the 7 and 10. For whatever reason, it's been over the last handful of years, it doesn't just stop at the week of bad play. It lasts a month. And as much as I can defend Aaron Boone to callers like that about bullpen decisions and everything else, I can't close my eyes and hide the fact that this happens every year. And this year in particular, it's ugly, it's disgraceful, it's lazy, it's moping. I can't hide from that fact. It's staring me in the face. And that's the manager. He has to take blame for it. Has to. I'll give him credit for the 50-24 or whatever, 50-20 and the best record in baseball. I was. But I can't just hide what's going on right now. It's not just losing. It's body language. It's hustle from guys who hustle. Volpe hustles. All of a sudden, he's not hustling. Like Gleyber Torres, okay, that's the same song and dance we've heard for years. But DJ LeMahieu? The blue-collar bat-to-ball player that we all loved? Now he's not hustling? He's running into double plays like a moron? I can't explain it. And I don't know if calling these guys out publicly like every fan wants is going to do it. But whatever they're doing, it's not working. And particularly with this group, once the ball gets rolling in the wrong direction, they have an extremely difficult time spinning it back into the positive angle. It's very difficult for them. Eventually it'll happen, but it takes a month. It takes a month and a half. Throw in one key injury like Stanton and forget about it. You got a month of playing the worst baseball in the league. Robbie in Lake Success. What's up, Robbie?
Chris.
Yes, sir.
I got a couple things. One on the sports, because this is a sports station, but I must get to the asteroid in space.
Yeah.
Because that you woke me up when I heard that. I got to listen to this. But anyway, my sports points. Keegan Bradley getting picked captain Ryder Cup U.S. That's wonderful. He's from, played for St. John's. It's just going to be epic when he comes when it's next year at Bethpage. And that's my first point. Second point on... We're at like the mile 15 of a marathon here. There's so much could go right and so much could go wrong. When I'm racing a marathon at 15 miles, sometimes you don't feel good, but when you hit 16, 17, 18, you start feeling better. You have like waves of good patches and bad patches. It's the same thing what's going on here in the baseball. Last point on the sports, I'm watching your boy Chapman, who's completely not the same pitcher. 40 pitches, and he can't even get three outs, and he just imploded out there. And I mean, I never saw 40 pitches for a closer, and he gets two outs. But here's my point on the asteroid, because it's 4 o'clock, 4, whatever it is in the morning, you had me thinking, okay? And it's wonderful, because I'm a science guy. And when you made a point, 900,000 miles in the vastness of space.
Yeah.
That's the moon is 250,000 miles away. And the actual dinosaurs, that's flipped back and forth twice. The dinosaurs, okay, were extinct on a asteroid that hit the Earth was size of like 2 miles in length.
Right.
And from the explosion and the cloud cover and the dust and the sun not getting the light, it basically destroyed life on the planet.
Right.
That's how close. Now look at the moon. Okay, how many times on the dark side? How many craters? Because of the atmosphere, that thing's been pounded thousands and thousands and thousands of times since, I guess it's been the inception. But the point being, when you think about this, Chris, and I know it's a sports station, but sometimes philosophy and sports, and at this time of the morning, nothing happened last night other than the Mets losing in the afternoon. It's great to think a little bit. We are four light years away, Chris. Four light years away from our closest star. That light travels at 186,000 miles a second.
Right.
By the Voyager spacecraft that's out there that was launched in 1976, at this rate, and that thing's moving like, I don't know, 30,000 kilometers a second, think about that speed. You're talking he'll take 70,000 years if it was pointed in the right direction
right.
to hit Alpha Centauri, Proxima Centauri. And the vastness of the universe, and we're getting into something way out, way probably way past your listenership, and maybe
be careful,
past my brain, and because it's unfathomable. It is billions and billions of light years in distances and galaxies. Each galaxy, billions of light stars. Chris, but you made the point, but I just had to throw this out because you know what you're thinking.
I'm thinking.
Other than let's talk sports, I'm imagining Yankees, and listen, there's more to life. But this is crazy.
Hopefully, as long as this thing doesn't hit us. Thank you, Robbie. I appreciate the phone call. I think we went a little deep there, but yeah. No, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I saw a stand-up comedian talking about space, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's infinity. Like, the universe is infinite, and every day it's getting bigger. That means infinity is getting larger. That doesn't make any sense. It's when you think about how vast space is, it's a daunting task because it makes you realize how sad and pathetic we all are. No, that's a bit much, but how pointless we all are. 888-808-101, how pointless an argument about whether Aaron Boone should call out players publicly is. Every once in a while you need that. You got to yell about the pointless stuff. It's the small things in life. It's the minutia of life that you get through. That's the good stuff. That's what makes us different than some inanimate asteroid plowing through space. The idea that I can think, and therefore I hate Aaron Boone. That's life.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Oh. All right, 4:32. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. Let's get back to the calls here as we got another half hour in our 5-hour midnight ride. A baseball 5-hour midnight ride. We do have the second episode of Hard Knocks tonight. Looking forward to it. I was actually impressed with how home box office. Oh, my God. Russo called it home box office in his rant. It was the funniest thing ever. Who still calls it home box office? I can't. He said all the other stuff that was funny.
On home box office.
I still can't get over that. I wouldn't watch it if I had insomnia. Like, all the jokes were great, but fine. But just to call it home box office. I literally almost forgot that it was called home box office until he said it. I was hysterical laughing. But on home box office, yes, the Giants have full control, editorial control. But I actually enjoyed it. And I talked about this one. I don't know if I would enjoy it as much if it were the Cleveland Browns, Cincinnati Bengals, I don't know, whomever. Like, without the players, without the games, like, just the front office stuff, going over the draft, finding out how the organization works and everything. I think it's this particular one. We'll see if they continue them. And maybe next year, obviously, it wouldn't be the Giants, and we'll see how I feel about it. But I would think that it really is much more impactful for the fan base of the team. And I guess that goes for all of them, but this one in particular, really, like, I don't know how interested I would be in the draft board of, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I just don't know. Where the Giants, it's like, ooh, like, how do they think? What are they, ooh, like, Bowen comes in and gives this, you know, he wants pass rushers. Whoa. What a novelty. Whereas if it was someone else, I don't know if I'd care. But I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see. I know they have editorial control, and again, I fully expect, like, me and Fliegelman were talking about it. I wonder how deep, when it comes to the draft, and I don't know what episode that would be. It might not be tonight. But whenever they get to the draft or prep for the draft, I'm really wondering if they're going to be willing to talk about how they tried to trade up for a quarterback. Because episode one ended with the year of Daniel Jones. And I just don't know if they're going to be willing to talk about how much they want Drake May and what they're willing to give up. And I certainly don't know if they're going to show whoever it was. And you know it's going to be somebody, whether it's an underling, whether it's some scout, whether it's somebody who, you know, doesn't have enough pull, and clearly they didn't. But someone's on there pounding the table saying, you have to get the quarterback, you have to get the quarterback. Daniel Jones, can't trust him, can't trust him. Someone's saying that. Will they show it? I don't know. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
In a world where Chris covers space, time, and travel. I love it. This is fantastic. That's how great your show is. 5 hours. We're talking space. We're talking. How about, I got three things on the X real quick.
Yeah.
How great would it be to have a George Steinbrenner missive and have it read by how great were those days? Remember?
Yes, they were. Oh, no, he would play the, they would play the patent. Coming up. Yeah, they would play the patent music, and Mike would read the missives. Yeah, absolutely. and listen, I think what would George do is one of the more boring topics that you could possibly.
What would he say? Like, I wanted you to maybe read one of those quotes, like one day.
Yeah.
Just say, who said this?
Just make up my own message.
They were great.
They were tremendous. And listen, right now, there's no doubt. I mean, it wouldn't have taken this long. We all know.
Boone
and Cashman would have been fired. There's no doubt.
Well, yeah.
If this were the heyday of George's, you know, faculties, there's no doubt they would have been fired. It doesn't mean it would have been the right thing to do, but they absolutely would have been fired. There's no doubt about it.
What bothers me about Boone's approach is even when, you know, they just, why can't we lose three and then win four? It's like when we lose. And then as we're losing, it's frustrating, but he keeps saying, I see improvements. It drives me.
Yeah, I know. I don't get hung up on it.
No, he has to say that. He's toeing the line. I get it. But.
Something it's not towing the line, it's protecting his players.
I know, but if we go into the swoon again, you have to question both of these guys. If we don't get to it, 95 wins, we get to the playoffs, I'm happy because anyone could win, but I'm a little concerned.
Well, I'm happy happy in that moment. I mean, and thank you for the call, Maury. I want to get to a bunch as I can through the show here, but thank you for always calling. And tonight is your night, bro. I wouldn't be happy with that being the end of it. I don't want to lose in the wild card series, but... Yeah, I mean, right now, when we went into the season, I don't, like, people forget because they won, they were the first team to 50 wins and had the best record in baseball. Heading into the season, I don't think, and even with the addition of Juan Soto, I don't think anybody expected just to plow through the American League East and win the division and beat out the Baltimore Orioles. I think most Yankee fans felt like the Orioles won 100 plus games last year, only getting better, probably going to win the division. If they win 96, 97 games, make it to the playoffs, certainly if they win a division, you have to be thrilled with it, even with this swoon. Like, it's still, I don't think they're going to fire him. I think they're going to give him the year. If they don't make the playoffs, I mean, both of them have to be gone. I'll be right there. Believe me, you might think I'm a Cashman defender. You can't miss the playoffs on the must-win championship season. He's got to go. Like, this is their year. So that's why I have no fear about what he would do. He's going to try and trade because this is it. He's going to try and add to the team. But, yeah, I mean, 95 wins in the playoffs, absolutely I'm happy. It doesn't matter how you get there. Same thing as like a 400 hitter. He doesn't hit 300 hitter, excuse me. He doesn't hit 300 every day of the season. He'll hit a 200, 400, 250, 350. That's how you get to 300. But I agree. The major problem is they get into these things. It takes forever to get out of them. It takes way too long. It's like Stanton coming back. It takes forever to get his swing going. When the Yankees hit a losing streak, they can't just end it at a you know, 6-game losing streak or 7 out of 10. It's always this prolonged month thing that now you feel like you're working uphill again just to get back to where you were. It sucks. Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
I want to tie the Yankee situation, of course, to Daniel Jones.
Well, sure. Why wouldn't you?
So the Yankees at the height of the season were what, 25 or 30 games over 500? I don't remember.
I want to say, well, now they're 18 and they're 10 games under, so they were at least 28 at one. I think it's right around 30, but let's just say 28 to make it. I think they were 28 games over 500.
All right, so they were 28 games over 500. Boone was, you know, coasting along.
Yes.
Cashman looked good. We were happy with that. For anyone that, you know, wants Cashman out and or Boone out, this is perfect. You know, this is what you need, right? You go from dominating, you know, baseball to this skid. And I don't know if you touched on it, But, you know, now we see, can Boone get these guys to play? Because remember, a lot of this is on the players, obviously. They just forgot how to play. They have no confidence. And Cashman, like you said, I think you just touched on it. The deadline, what is he going to do? Because,
yeah,
like, if they skid all the way, I mean, we're going to see it. I think this is it. And we'll know, like, hey, this is time to move on from Boone and Cashman. But reminds me of Daniel Jones with these guys lost confidence. That's what happened. You played sports. You played football on a good level. You know, when you're winning, you feel like you can't lose. You know, you just get so confident as individually and as a team. The Yankees lost that. So this reminds me, like I said, Daniel Jones, I do feel there's a confidence issue here. Because not only does he have a lot of the other, you know, players around the league, the teams that just are down on the guy. He's got guys like you that are supposedly diehard Giants fans, right? And look at you. You're on a radio show talking about the guy ad nauseum. And you're supposed, like, you don't have his back whatsoever. So, and it's not an excuse. It's a fact. He has no, like, his confidence level. I feel bad for the guy. That's why
it's my
fault. Root even harder for that guy. 216.
I am rooting for
because
him
because we're supposed to stick together.
I am rooting for him.
I don't know, man. I dig deep down. I'm a lie detector. There would be a little tiny bit of, yeah, I hope he goes down this year and we can move on, right? So you don't want him to succeed. Think about it.
No, that's not true. I want the Giants to succeed. There's no doubt about it. Do I want to win 8 games and him play fairly well and kick this down the can when I kick the can down the line when I don't believe in him? No, I mean, you might be right. There's some level of that where I don't want mediocrity and then to be satisfied with it. No. But do I want him to become the quarterback of the future for the New York Giants? Do I want that question answered? Do I want Daniel Jones just to be the guy and have that thing settled and he's our guy moving forward and he's shown me enough where I believe in him and he's successful and he throws 30 touchdown passes and everything works out? Of course that's what I want. Of course that's what I want.
I'm just curious to see. If he does do what I know deep down he can do, if you'll ever fully do a 360 and say, hey, you know what, guys? I'm going to back this guy as a franchise quarterback for that. Because remember, everybody talks about him moving on.
And
he's only 27 years old.
I understand. No, the age isn't really a problem. It's the injuries.
If he was the guy.
Yeah.
But how would you do that, Chris?
He hung up on me because he doesn't want to answer the question. How many years of crap before you admit that Daniel Jones isn't the guy? Like, it's always on the us Daniel Jones deniers to, like, are you going to accept? What about you? When are you going to accept? How many years does he get? And I'm not rooting against him. I'm just telling you what I think. I don't think he'll do it. I don't think he's good enough to really be the quarterback of a franchise that doesn't have everything needed to be successful. I think he can be a quarterback in this league. I think he's talented enough to do that. I don't think he can drag the Giants to where they need to go. And he's not a difference maker. He's not a quarterback that's going to, like, be the reason you win. And I don't want to pay quarterbacks when they're not, if they can't be the reason to win. I don't want to give him $40 million and then have him be someone who maybe, if everything else goes great, if they have an 85 Bears defense or a bunch of weapons around him and, you know, the running back has a 2,000-yard season and the defense sacks the quarterback 100 times, like, okay, maybe he can win then. But I hope I'm wrong. Are you kidding me? I hope they're playing in the NFC Championship game and he throws 35 touchdown passes this year. Why wouldn't I want that? Of course I do. But I got to tell you, in my opinion, I don't see it. Aldo in Long Island. What's up, Aldo?
Look out, old Mac is back.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I think,
for another 14, 16 minutes or so, at least.
Yeah, I think Brett and Maury should be paid contributors.
Yeah.
I mean, how'd they win that playoff game with Mears? With Daniel Jones? What'd they do with Mears?
No, he played great in that game.
All right. Listen, Phil Simms didn't get off to a blazing start either when he started with the Giants.
No, I know. Out of Morehead State, I've heard the Phil Simms comparison once or twice. I mean, it's a different world. Quite honestly, you don't have the time or, you know, the cat. Phil Simms didn't, you know, while he was trying to find it, wasn't making $40 million. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, that's correct. And also, I'm not really making a comparison there. But listen, the Giants have to draft better. They got to put a team together. If you're going to start doing the thing like maybe the Houston Rockets did in the 80s, let's tank and get Samson and get Olajuwon. But that didn't work out either with those two players. I think you got to draft better. I mean, but look, the Barkley draft, look at who some of these people were recommended that they should draft. They were all bust, too.
Well, the quarterbacks,
Barkley wasn't a bust, but they were bust, these guys that they're talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, that doesn't, I hate that argument. It doesn't make up for the bad pick. There was also great players in there. Like, I understand what other people said. I'll own it. I wanted Sam Darnold. I wanted the Giants to draft Sam Darnold. That's what I wanted. That doesn't excuse them for not seeing Josh Allen. Because they could have drafted Josh Allen. They could have drafted Lamar Jackson. All right, just because I wanted or other people wanted doesn't mean they get an excuse for drafting a running back when you said, hey, they could have had Sam Darnold. They also could have had Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. I'm sorry. They drafted a running back without a roster. It was a terrible draft pick. He was here for a bunch of years. He played great. They didn't win. All but one year, they didn't win. In fact, they lost at epic levels. Their seasons were done by Thanksgiving almost exclusively, except for one year. When I draft someone second overall in the draft, I expect him to be a part of more winning than one season over 6 years here. So you can justify the pick by saying, could have been Sam Darnold, could have been Josh Rosen, could have been this one, could have been that one. Yeah, it could have been Josh Allen. Why can't we ever hold teams accountable for not getting the right guy? Yeah, I know that was the talk. Sam Darnold was the second best, was the quarterback of you going to take. You know what? Sorry. One, we don't know if the situation would have worked out the same if Sam Darnold came to the Giants as opposed to the Jets. We have no idea. And two, there were quarterbacks who've been extremely successful. There was an offensive lineman there. You didn't have to take the quarterback. They could have traded down. They could have taken the lineman who went to the Colts for some reason, Nelson, who's on his way to the Hall of Fame. Maybe they could have drafted him. Why? I hate that argument. I hate the argument that it was either him or Barkley. It was either Barkley or Darnold, and it would have been a bust either way. I hate that argument. It doesn't excuse a bad draft pick because there were other busts in the draft. Or because the prevailing wisdom from the pundits was that they were that the other player to take was Sam Darnold. They could have taken anyone. They could have taken Josh Allen. They could have taken Nelson. They could have traded back, got more picks, and who knows who they could have got instead of taking a running back second overall. It was a terrible pick. And you can't justify it by giving me other busts in the draft.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
And the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, only a few minutes left. Let's try to get to as many calls as we can as we take you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Let's get right to it. Peter and Lawrence, what's up, Pete?
Well, you know, I've been listening the entire night.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Your blood pressure is up, isn't it?
No, I'm feeling pretty good.
Okay, the person besides Boone supposed to point out mistakes is Aaron Judge.
Mm-hmm.
He's the captain.
Yep.
He has to be a Munson. He has to be a Nettles. Okay. He has to be a Randolph. He has to be a Donnie Baseball. He has to be a Jeter to cure the problem. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, I guess. I don't know if every one of those guys were
this way. I watched Giants tonight.
Yeah, I mean Munson.
San Fran. Yeah. And when Joe Torre spoke, that was baseball. You need Judge to step up.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't disagree with that. I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, you're going to list every captain, and he needs to be like that. I mean, okay. I mean, each one of those guys, you could probably point to a scenario where they weren't a great, you know, I don't know. I always said my main problem with Jeter is his attitude towards Alex Rodriguez. I mean, he was the captain of the team. He could have made life a lot easier for A-Rod. He didn't. Steve in Illinois. What's up, Steve?
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Alex Verdugo is loves the clubhouse, says it's the best clubhouse he's ever been in,
yeah.
And that's the problem. The problem
that's
is
the problem.
Boone's a great, yeah. You know why? Boone is a great manager, but you can't fire the whole team. They need a different voice there. That's it. Verdugo had Cora, a world champion. So Judge has never heard a different manager. It would be
that's
good
not
for
true.
The Yankees.
He heard Joe Girardi in 2017.
Oh, that's right. Well, but this clubhouse, this team, we would have loved to fire on Friday, right? They need somebody else there. That's it. And that'll shake them up.
Okay. I don't agree necessarily. I don't think they need a new voice. I don't think a new voice suddenly stops them from hustling and playing well. I mean, suddenly Verdugo is going to... And then here's... Let me go on a rant real quick about Alex Cora, too. Like, the idea that Alex Cora is the greatest manager of all time, every time they play the Red Sox, oh, again, Alex Cora managing circles around Aaron Boone. I mean, everyone tells me it's easy to manage when things are going well. Well, that was the 2018 Red Sox. Let's not even get into what they were doing, as he was a year removed from the cheating scandal that got him suspended for an entire season. But in 2018, everything went right for the Red Sox. They cakewalked through a season, won 111 games, whatever kind of crazy number, 108 games, whatever it was, and cakewalked through the World Series. Won a World Series championship, can't deny it. But everyone tells me how easy it is to manage when they're playing well. And then how many times has he finished in last place with the Boston Red Sox? I mean, he's finished in last place almost half the seasons he's been there. And, you know, one of them he wasn't there because he was suspended for being almost the ringleader of the biggest cheating scandal since the Black Sox in 1919. But, you know, Alex Cora, the greatest manager in baseball. Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
You know, I don't know how I haven't talked to you since that debacle Friday night. But, you know, look, this has been a, you know, I listened to BT and Sal and,
yep.
One says it's the manager. The other one says, you know, the hustle and the not hustle.
One says the sky is blue. The other one says it's brown. One says...
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. You know, the players have been just underperforming. It's really been a train wreck. They're not a good team. You know, I had them... Look, there's a chance, too, if they continue, which I don't think they will continue at this rate, but if they do, they will not make the playoffs.
Oh, clearly. If they continue at this rate, if they lose 16 out of every 22, yeah, they're not going to make the playoffs. I promise you that. I mean, look, they're not a very good team. Again, they had the best record in baseball. I mean, I understand that now they have a track record of failing after these good starts. And we use 22 as the prime example. They won 99 games and won the division that year, but needless to say, like... They've played 3 months. The season 6 months. They played half the year. They played 3 months. 2 months, they were one of the best, if not the best team in baseball. 1 month, they've been the worst. It is a crazy, dichotomy. It's crazy that they've been the best and the worst in the same season. But, I mean, I maybe I'm too pragmatic. I can't just say, okay, there's been 3 months to the season. Two of those months, two-thirds of that time, they've been the best team in baseball. 1 month, they've been the worst. And I have to look at the 1 month and say that's the real them. Otherwise, I'm some shill Yankee fan apologist. When I can't say, well, most of the time they've been really good, I have to just go, well, they're obviously the bad team they've been the last month. That's the real one. Mitchell in Fort Lee, what's up, buddy? I just wanted to say thanks.
You okay, Big Mac?
Thanks for calling. I'll catch you tomorrow, Mitch, all right?
Okay, Big Mac, tomorrow.
And I'm sorry about it. Wanted to just say hello. You call me, I say hello. Or at least I try to. I certainly say goodbye, as I will right now. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. I'll catch you again 2 a.m. Let's go, Yankees. Let's go, Mets. What the hell? Let's really go, Yankees. We need a freaking win. I mean, desperate for a win here. Let's go. But I'll catch you, too. Enjoy the rest of your day. Hopefully it's not as hot as it was yesterday. Everybody have a great day. The warm-up show is next with Krista Presti. Thank you, Fleegs. I'm out of here. Sports Radio 101.9 FM.